It's like you are sure you hold something concrete in your hands,
but the next moment it simply melts. It's gone. Like holding those bit dark, bit light, great dark light clouds, nimbuses, right in the middle of my sinuses, leaching down through my dry throat, filled with leftovers of 6 espressos for breakfast and a slimy layers of yeast mixed with belch of dark chocolate, tribally dancing down through my esophagus, intruding the stomach to pump up the toxic blood.
Hi everyone, we are Eddie and Iggy, and this is our podcast.
I'm Edith Lazar. I am a fashion theorist in the making, art writer and curator.
My name is Igor Koroka. I am a choreographer and also a cultural worker. So in this particular podcast, we will focus more on how we emotionally feel when we are talking about depression, what does this sort of state means, how it manifests, how we embody it, and what sorts of affects do we experience.
But you can't. happens is that I just find it difficult to leave. Mm-hmm. And when I say this, I really mean it. I mean, it's like my body is in a complete, almost complete shutdown. Mm-hmm. I woke up in the morning, I'm a very morning person. Mm-hmm. Usually I get up very early and then I cannot wake up. Mm-hmm. I wake up and then I'm not able to move out from the bed. And mm-hmm. I stay in bed. And it's this emotional feeling that would help if I would probably cry, but I cannot cry because somehow inside of me there is this sadness mixed with anger of being sad. Mm-hmm. So it's quite this difficulty of, you know, how do you react to that, right? Are you going to cry? Are you going to smash something? Mm-hmm. But all of them imply you getting out of bed, which is not something that I want you to do. Mm-hmm. And then everything is in slow motion. I actually feel that I'm more open in a way to this sensorially, mm-hmm. like the passing of time, mm-hmm. the atmosphere in the room, the things that I read, the sadness that overwhelms me, my position in the room, how the people that I interact with, I can feel their emotions. It's like the level of empathy somehow grows. You can actually, and it's very difficult not to let this somehow out of you. Mm-hmm. But and it's such a, but also everything is like in slow motion, and it's, I don't feel like eating too much, or if I eat, it's basically because I know my body needs food, even if now it doesn't need it. Mm-hmm. It feels like I don't want to.
Yeah, yeah.
But everything is like a shutting down, like, you know, think of like this, and you're like this in a small level of surviving, and that's all. And it's also like that with like, interactions, libido, you know, thinking about this touching. I just feel like I want this kind of affection, and at the same time, it annoys me. It irritates literally my skin.
Mm-hmm. I totally understand this, because when I have these moments also, you know, I experience similarly in the morning, for example, when it comes. And especially I get super annoyed if I woke up okay, got kind of in a okay feeling or mood, got up, made coffee, decided to go back to bed because I wanted to, I don't know, watch something on the computer, and then it suddenly again comes. It's like this sort of, I completely change the mood from being okay into being completely sad, because of, there's not even a trigger that I can catch and say, oh, this made me sad, I read something that was sad. It just comes, and then I feel everything, like you said, time just starts being prolonged. Mm-hmm. I think there is this beautiful image from the movie Melancholia, when everything is prolonged and in very slow motion, you turn around and it's already 3 o'clock. And like, not only that you skip breakfast or whatever,
you don't even want to eat or anything, and even the things that give pleasure, like even eating, just come on, is the thing most of us love.
Yeah.
It's such a difficult thing to do, you cannot even chew properly.
Yeah.
I also feel like that it's dilution of time, but it's this mix, however, of also feeling guilty for doing this.
Exactly, and this is also what I wanted to, you pointed it out good, in terms that you also start judging yourself, again shaming yourself for like being, oh come on, you know that this is it, but you have to be productive, you have to do something, get the fuck out of bed and do like, at least I don't know, go to grocery store or whatever, and it takes so much effort to do it, and then at the same time, so you are aware of what is going on, but you can't do anything. Physically, you cannot just, or let's say in my case, eventually I do move, but it takes a lot of time until it happens. Like, these were especially, I could remember while I was living in Berlin, this was especially like the, even later in Belgrade, and even sometimes today, this comes. Now it is much less than it used to be before, but in these years when it was quite, how I say, acute, mm-hmm. like I remember this, like starting my day basically at 3 or 4 in the afternoon.
Yes, same. Because I was waking up, doing a little bit, waking up late, by the way, working a little bit, and then going to bed at 1 yeah. after lunch, or like 2 after lunch. Mm. And I remember that my partner then was always like, are you going to take a nap now? I don't understand exactly how your program functions. And it was also like, oh, but you should stay and try to focus more and try to work. And it was so difficult to explain. Also, when you have this fear that depression is... and it is a thing that people fear, and also something that is going to be judged, mm-hmm. because, you know, how can you not snap out of it?
Yeah.
You should snap out of it, like get real. But you are very real. Mm-hmm. And I remember that in those moments, actually, when I feel the most this sadness and also this time diluting, that's also something that I like it the most, because you somehow accept life as it is.
Mm.
You have this feeling of acceptance, and I also find this pleasure in going through stuff that I would be otherwise anxious about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because when you're depressed, you're accepting. When you start being anxious, mm. then this is like this crazy about future and
yeah.
feeling that it's overwhelming, that you're not going to be able to do anything. But in a depression mode, you're just feeling everything very slow, and you're somehow accepting some of it.
Mm-hmm.
You're accepting life and its unfairness, mm-hmm. and like it is. Mm-hmm. And of course, it's not normal, because usually it's not normal, but in the sense that it's nice to have hope,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
to see mm-hmm. some sort of an outcome, even if it's not something that you can pinpoint,
mm-hmm.
just know that you're going to go through it. It's this feeling that
For me, it also I also remember when it comes to this like fight inside of yourself, like to move yourself, and this shaming and judging, I always remember this, like, oh, there is all this application and stuff, that application that you have to do, job search, that you have
yes.
to do all this stuff, and you're not doing it.
Yes, all that. You should produce more. You should. I was always comparing myself to writers that were working abroad,
yeah.
or like were way older than I am,
yeah.
so different education, different expectations of doing. But I was comparing myself to that, and of course that. It's not a good meme.
Yeah. I was comparing myself to my roommate, because like we were both, let's say, in business, in the
mm-hmm.
market, and both coming from Belgrade, and she would get, let's say, more opportunities, so she was dancing for these famous artists, famous choreographers. I was not performing for others, and then it would be like this sort of like, oh, but it's because you lack these social skills of communicating.
Oh,
you don't know how to approach
mm-hmm.
to other people. You don't know
how to network,
how to mingle, how to sell this that you want to
yeah.
do. You don't know how to be like kind of flirtatious, but also like not sexually flirtatious, but like, you know, constantly shaming, because what I know is that in the room next to me there is this more and more opportunities, and it's not about being jealous, it's about knowing that that person has a secure future for next year or two,
mm-hmm.
and knowing that I still have a shit of work to do in order to
yes.
if I want to stay in Germany, for example, or whatever. And these are the things that also come, and it's really like, you know, this kind of I don't know, like some sort of a big cozy cat that comes, or like animal, furry animal that comes to your room and your bed and just covers you and makes you feel so, you know, warm and cozy, like with all these thoughts of judging and shaming.
Hello anxiety,
yeah. So I was I remember after I went to Belgrade to like thinking that I would get better after 1 month and then staying next 4 years, I remember that in these first 6 months it took me, because I started visiting like a therapist and so on. I remember how it took me a long time, first of all, to establish a daily structure. And this is when I finally admitted and learned that unless I have daily structure, I easily get depressed. I get lost and I cannot just function. I think this is something many people experience, but somehow with me, it's like, just don't leave me out of structure, otherwise...
Yes, I also found out that I'm far more better when I have like this structure. I consider a form of something that I have to fight with. So that's usually institutional structure. So if I have that institutional structure, somehow the point for me is to try to dumb it.
Yeah.
But then you have a purpose, and then you have this some sort of, okay, in the morning I have to go to university, get to this and that class. And then I have this time for myself, and this is when I'm going to do it, fight the system.
Yes.
Right? But then you find yourself in the system.
Yeah.
And then things change completely, and it comes like everything's like so psychotic, and you just get rummaging through yourself and through your own thoughts so much that you get to question everything you do, and you don't have any kind of distancing anymore. Because you're not someone that it's only contingent to the structure, you're in the structure, you're part of it, and you have to produce for it.
Let's take a look at my life. I'm a promising young artist, very active in the field of performing arts. Aren't we many? I'm a promising young artist, very active in the field of performing arts that sits at home, which is, by the way, I have no clue what. Somewhere between a hotel room, friend's place sofa, my mother's apartment and rented apartment in the city I'm officially based in. Somewhere between the people traveling with me and long distance calls with my family and friends. Somewhere between the twos of everything that I have here and there. Two SIM cards, two library cards, two bank accounts, two health insurance cards, two tax declaration documents, two failure pension plans, two diplomas, two IDs, two public transport tickets, two beds, two shower gels, two languages to communicate through, two mentalities to operate with. Anyways, I am a promising young artist, very active in the field of performing arts. I sit at home imagining what could be the next show to get production money for. And I love that. It's very challenging to meet priorities that grant committees set. So I read a lot, write a lot, applications, conceptualizing projects, conceptualizing reality, conceptualizing really hardcore, because I'm a promising young artist, very active in the field of performing arts, coming from the ex-EU countries. We must keep fulfilling that image of intellectual artists on the art market, you know, body carriers of the former times, golden times or difficult times, and social structures that not even Tolkien or J.K. Rowling could ever conceptualize about. Guardians of free speech, solidarity, self-organization, self-education, and fabulous outfits and haircuts. I am an online rat. I am hanging out on social networks 24/7. I make events and post some crazy pictures of my work. I make funny comments on my potential producer's profile pictures. I am a promising young artist, very active in the field of performing arts, who keeps mingling on the festivals, while having drinks after performances, at exhibitions, at workshops, at auditions, at lectures, in a bar, in a bed, in a plane, in a cab, in a sauna, on summer vacation, on a funeral, on weddings, on a birthday party, even on ecstasy, with everyone. And programmers do. It's very important to fit into their next 2 years' vision of how the performances should be like. I'm the nomad. I shift social environments same as homeless man shifts tickets in front of the theater. I realize that the notion of normal is only social culturally constructed because while living in other cities, things I really believe in appear to be just a cultural heritage of the society I grew up in. That's why I'm a tourist in my own hometown. I'm a solidary comrade with local dance festivals in the Western Balkans or East Europe. I understand the lack of money within their production budgets because I know where I come from. I am an advocate for dance. I advocate publicly for broader visibility of contemporary dance in Serbia and the Balkans. I advocate in the Parliament of Republic of Serbia, in the Ministry of Culture, City Council, in municipalities, embassies, regionally, internationally, wherever it is possible. I fight against the discontinuity in financing production, education, presentation of local contemporary dance practices, though I understand that space for addressing such issues publicly gets every day more and more narrowed through corruption, privatization of public goods, gentrification, etc. I am a never-ending optimist, always ready to participate in high-economy European cultural projects based on exchange between artists from Eastern and Western Europe. I'm a provocateur. I like to subvert situation of pitching for my artistic practice in front of curators and producers from large Western art market networks. I switch temporarily our positions within power relations by asking them, how can I offer you my artistic qualities and cultural political agencies to contribute in development of your network? I'm used to receive the usual answer to that question. Sorry, we ran out of time. I am only illusory well-paid at home in the West. Everything I earn, I immediately spend on health insurance, social insurance, future pension, rent, bills, biofood, taxes, even taxes for TV and radio broadcasting, which I don't even possess. But nevertheless, I enjoy to sit every year in the immigration office and listen how, after reducement of these costs from my entire year incomes, in the end I always get that romantic note, unless you start earning more money, I'm afraid we'll have to deport you back to Serbia. I'm an adventurist. I understand that the term courage is overrated. Because once you decide to jump off the cliff with all your heart, you're no longer a coward or courageous. Whatever comes to your way, you simply deal with it. Your senses are sharpened up. The word routine and continuity are dismissed from your vocabulary, making space for an ever-rising adrenaline thrill ride. New places, new habits, new challenges, new people. I realize how most things and people in my life are just randomly passing through and how instinctively I diminish the importance of most situations. I perfect the right balance between bonding and letting go, a perpetual battle between nostalgia and pragmatism. Oh, I'm single, with few parallel long-distance relationships or one-night stands with people I work with temporarily in artistic projects or meet at different festivals and residences and airports. That works. I'm a lover in the moment of here and now. I'm a lover always in the wrong time zone. I am a lover who separates sex from commitment. I'm a lover who falls in love without falling in love. I'm a lover, a matter of destiny. I am a lover, not only a matter of sensation, but also of an action and creation.
I'm got to listen to my soul. Got to find what makes me whole. I'm got to listen to my soul. Thank you.
paradoxically, I am someone who tries to participate in my politics through the same artistic practice I do to earn for my living. But once I start earning for my living, my hands are dirty, because by working I become comply or ally of social and political system I try to criticize or protest against.
I'm good to listen to my heart speak.
Who will take my place when I go?
Depressive awareness that paradoxically in my profession as a man I'm always an advantage compared to women. Plus that depressive awareness that paradoxically I'm anyways here just another representative figure whose speech will never make a broader effect after this moment, because as citizens we prefer to watch and listen protagonists of the performance instead of reacting on the general state of affairs we are all part of.
Creating this kind of new value about myself, and this is the jobs that you don't want to do, mm-hmm. which usually are associated with, let's say, non-cultural.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not really that. I mean, you when you work in the cultural sector, you put so much of yourself mm-hmm. that you don't enjoy your wage anymore. You know, mm-hmm. you're not being able to enjoy that. Okay. I got all of this money now to spend on a holiday, or just being happy that, okay, I worked for this. You're more like, I have to give this and this, create this and this mm-hmm. content, work networking. So somehow you don't get to that part in which you feel your work also being paid off.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I think for me it is something... After experiencing like doing a job for 2 years, that generally is not something I am interested in. But let's say first year, or maybe even first year. Even though from the beginning I accepted the job and I applied actually for the job, I knew that it is something I'm not interested in it, but I know that it provides me some financial security and stability that is good. Because it is the moment when I like also dropped out from academia, I quit, and it was a very scandalous thing, and then somehow I was like, I need a job.
Of course.
And so so I remember that in that time, while I was being able to work that job and also other works that are more like artistic or cultural, even though altogether it was too much, I was somehow inside happy and satisfied, because I knew that somehow this is the good model where I could have the stability that provides me to live happily, in terms of having like some concrete apartment that I can afford to pay, and just to like be, how to say, satisfied, and that my health is okay and so on. But the thing is that in the second year, when I actually did not have so many opportunities to work, because I was not mingling enough, I was not traveling enough, I wasn't anymore like, that was already like third year that I was away from Berlin, so it's like, you're not there anymore, nobody knows, nobody like remembers you anyways. And also in Serbia, there were no many jobs in theaters and so on, it was like a very bad year. This is where things became really depressive, even though every morning I was waking up and saying to myself, yes, you're doing the job that brings you money and stability. I still felt just like I was drowning, basically.
Yeah, like missing out on all this stuff that it's more connected to your body than...
Yeah, it was really like I could do all the job, but I also saw how even more demotivated I was with this job. Like I couldn't, because luckily the job was, I was working as an assistant in an organization, so the job is more like related to organization, coordination, and this sort of like things that you also don't need to involve emotionally or whatever to do. Like you can do it like very rationally, but even in that situation I felt completely demotivated to do anything. It was like, you know, like suddenly these hours became like a nightmare. It felt like every day is like 1 year long. And then I get home just, you know, tired, but not so much from the work, but from all of this like...
Waiting to get out of work.
Yeah, and also this feeling of being demotivated and hopeless, and thinking that, you know, like reaching this point where I really thought, that's it. Like, I would just like continue working this job and this will be it. Like, I wouldn't be anymore able to do anything else. You know, going into this really like rabbit hole, like this kind of like, you know, like deep. Feeling that whatever comes to your mind that you could do, like, oh, look, there is the opportunity, maybe I should apply for this, or maybe I should do, you come up with the thoughts and arguments why not to do it, because it doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And this was something that for me was very strong, and even now I cannot like explain how is it possible that within such a state I came to the position that I applied for some things and then got them. And now I'm here.
Thing, for me also, because I also applied for a lot of things and went to different places, but I was also trying to write my PhD, which didn't happen. But one of the things that I was constantly reminded of and reminded myself is that, oh, you have to write this, you cannot do this and that and other things, you know, that would have give me another perspective of what I do. But somehow my body resisted all this process of also writing something that I didn't felt it gets me somewhere. And also, like, I didn't feel like it gets me somehow content with what I do. And I was constantly finding other projects.
Mm.
And also in those projects, I felt motivated, but also demotivated. And I was always finding this excuse that, oh, I have to write for my PhD. While I was writing for my PhD, I felt all this depression and anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like such a strong body reaction that I think scared the shit out of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother, who has been one of my, you know, supporters through a lot of educational processes,
mm-hmm.
because I'm from a very modest family, so she's always been, you know, that person that's like, I think you could do it. But also, it's also this thing that very in the East European side somehow,
mm-hmm.
we took this Western discourse that if you want something and you work for it, you will get it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not always like that,
mm-hmm.
you know? You have to follow your dreams. Or like our parents will usually say this because, you know, when they were young, it was socialism, it was communism. They didn't have this broad perspective of choices,
mm-hmm.
that apparently we have, and we know it's not true.
Mm-hmm.
But they were always telling you, you can be whatever you want to be, which is also not true.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, and she was always like, oh, you can do it. And I grew up under this this mantra, you know,
mm-hmm.
that if I want something and I work hard enough,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to be tough. And
mm-hmm.
my mom was like, you have to toughen up. So
mm-hmm.
I was toughening up. You know, not crying in public.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
like
yeah.
You only cry when you're having a breakdown.
Yeah.
And then I got to this point where I was just crying was my state of things.
Mm-hmm.
I was always thinking that, well, if I would have the same energy for doing things as I would have for crying, I would have put up an institution
mm-hmm.
by now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's such an exhausting feeling
mm-hmm.
to have, trying to find different ways,
mm-hmm.
and also feeling demotivated,
mm-hmm.
like you don't feel you can actually pertain to something.
For me, I totally relate, because for me, there are two things. One thing is this, like, like also this little bit of Western model, like you have to work hard to get what you want.
You have to produce, you have to be better, because
yeah.
you know, you have to, if you want to make it, you have to be better than the others.
Yeah, and this also like ambition. I used to be so ambitious about the things, like until, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, I was like, really, what I need means I want what I want, I get. And I always get what I want. And this was like this. This was the mantra in my mind. And somehow I had really a lot of great opportunities to work, travel. And I was never using them in a wrong way. But somehow I was always in this machine and impression that I have to just keep working and be the machine in order
and
to
just
have...
do that. And
exactly.
Yes.
And then that's one thing. And the other thing is also because I'm a patient with rare disease since I was born, it is a part of very strong, like the main part of my identity, that also through the, like, education, or like how would you say that, my mother actually pretty much raised in me, I learned that I have to fight in order to even make it through the day. So from my perspective, you know, like having this condition, it's also on a daily basis that
you have to fight
constantly. And also in my case, I think it is a pattern that is related to the fact, oh, but I might be having limited health abilities and physical capabilities, but still I can be as good as others. Yeah.
Always going beyond your physical limitation,
totally,
mental
yeah.
limitation,
abilities. Yeah, yeah.
But at one point you just run out.
Mm-hmm.
You run out of
mm-hmm.
energy,
totally.
You run out of passion for what you
mm-hmm.
do.
Mm-hmm.
You basically feel like your entire life collapses.
Totally. So it's all these things that kind of put me, as you said, into this position, like, I can do it, I can do it, I can do it. And then, of course, you just get exhausted out of
it. And you realize you cannot.
And
I can't.
It's fine.
It's okay to say, I cannot.
But somehow, I mean, you can say it for yourself. The most important thing is to, of course, admit it in front of yourself and, of course, to share with others. The only thing is that in that moment you really negotiate, because with the environment and the system, it's like you're just kind of put off the list in a way, you know. And for me, for example, moving out of Berlin was one of the biggest and toughest decisions I ever did, in terms that on a professional level, I was aware that I'm doing a suicide. But on the personal level, I knew that I'm staying on the ground of common sense.
Mm-hmm.
And helping my common sense and my physical, emotional, and psychological being stable.
Yes, I think for me it's this idea of dropping out on
mm-hmm.
something, or like quitting. It's such an important step to make,
mm-hmm.
because it's not only yourself that you have to deal with.
Yes.
It's also the expectations
mm-hmm.
of the others
mm-hmm.
on you,
mm-hmm.
and their image of you, which is always the possibility of you being something else than you are, that you are, that you feel like, okay, it's also like a reason for depression,
mm-hmm.
or also like a reason for not quitting when you should,
mm-hmm.
you know you should
mm-hmm.
quit.
Mm-hmm.
And you go on because you feel, it's this expectation that are put on me, and these people that I care for that, you know, wait for me to do something, and I want to, but you cannot, and you
mm-hmm.
feel guilt for not doing that. So somehow it all gets you back into this, I can't, but I have to, until physically you cannot do anything
yeah.
anymore
mm.
and it's this break that you're going through that is kind of far more hard and
mm.
difficult and cruel, as if you were just okay, you're in that point where
mm.
it's good to just call it quits when it's still a healthy decision to make,
mm-hmm.
not when you're like, you know, already too dizzy
mm-hmm.
in this part where you're like, you feel like it's such a disease
mm-hmm.
that you cannot, it's
mm-hmm.
like a virus that
Yeah.
And you really need to make, like someone actually told me today that I really need to make an exercise of imagining how life was before I started being sad. Mm-hmm. Like what is the most vivid moment when I felt I was happy, like in this very natural, you know, like it's something that it's spontaneous, and try to picture it as clear as possible in order to know that those moments were there and that there is a possibility of them also being, and this is just something that you pass through. But it's also it's very difficult to do this when you're fighting like also like a program of work that you have to do. Because you were saying you said no, I said no to things that I would have loved to do. Because I was thinking, okay, I have to write my PhD, but I wasn't able to write. And for me, writing, it's like second nature. It's the thing I love the most. It's the thing that I can... It's the way, you know, the language flows and how you try to capture a moment to things that are pre-given to you. It's such a big part of myself and also the image I have of myself that it was almost maddening not being able to write. And if I was writing, I was always felt like, oh, for the PhD, it's not good enough. And when I was writing something else, it was, oh, but it takes so long, not understanding that any process actually takes time. And the moment I dropped out, it was such a liberating moment because I felt the joy of writing again. I mean, I was just like jumping in that writing process and using all the words that I felt I couldn't use because it's not good enough, using them here like they were water. You know, it's like such a beautiful feeling of just being able to navigate again through your own thoughts, because that's what's happening. I mean, you feel like your brain is somehow shrinking, and you have this material, you know, that someone just pulls, and so it makes your head smaller and smaller and smaller. Like it shrinks.
My muscles are weak. Head as heavy as a rock. Feeling backward. Grief. Cynicism is my language. Inefficiency, holding the future. I'm not able to make an understandable. Failure is the continuity. Scoliosis is the new dancing. Alienation seems to be my ploy. I am a killer joy.